Should we start a club? By Badalk, 05. Read by Cookie Mom, 6067. Chapter 1. Hob liked his current life. Granted, he liked nearly every phase of his long life, but he had a soft spot for this one in particular. He never thought he would get into teaching, especially since fighting seemed to be the only thing he was good at most days. But for the past century or so, he enjoyed alternating between teaching primary, secondary, and currently university-level classes. Sure, some university students were utter twats or slept through every class, but others had a genuine passion for their learning. The door to the new inn chimed, and Hobbs smiled as he continued to mark his papers, already knowing who it would be given the hour. Of course, there's another reason he enjoyed this particular century so very much. Your neck will grow stiff if you continue sitting in such a way, a voice like a midnight breeze murmured, while a shadow cast over his table. Not too worried, Hobbs shrugged as he finished marking the current paper he was on before looking up with a grin. I'm sure I can find someone who would be happy to give me a lovely neck massage again. Is that my only use to you, then, as a masseuse? Morpheus asked, with a quirk of his lips that never ceased to make Hobbs' heart race. He fought and clawed for every sign of amusement and reaction from the entity before him for centuries, but since their reunion over a year ago, Morpheus had allowed his emotions to unfurl like a particularly stubborn flower, an act of trust Hobbs had been endlessly humbled by. Heh. Endlessly. That's a good one. I mean, you would be booked solid with those magic fingers of yours, Hob grinned. And yet, I find you to be the only one I wish to pleasure. To underscore his point, Morpheus floated forward and brushed an idle finger along the back of Hob's neck. Hob couldn't stop the shudder from running through him before he lifted his chin and attempted a half-hearted glare. Though his reaction was absolutely justified, after centuries of wondering what Morpheus's touch would be like, Hob couldn't get enough. And if the Dream Lord's constant excuse to touch Hob was any indication, the feeling was mutual. Did you just come here to seduce me? The thought is tempting, but I merely hope to steal you away. The day is lovely, and I presume you have yet to enjoy it. Hob shot Morpheus a skeptical glance. It's nice out in London. There was that bend of those kissable lips once more. It is known to happen on occasion. Hob stretched and winced as his stiff muscles protested. Yeah, that massage would be nice right about now. Suppose I could be convinced. He allowed himself a smirk while he leaned back in his chair. Hob wasn't ready to cave so easily without a bit of a fight, however. Can't have Morpheus's ego grow even bigger than it already was. What else can you offer that could draw me away from the tempting lure of 20 more papers detailing the significance of the rise of the printing press? And yeah, Hob was still not fully over how utterly wrong he was about that particular fad. In fluid movements that would make the greatest dancer envious, Morpheus drew Hob to his feet and stepped forward so his lips were a breath away from Hob's ear. I assure you, there is much I can offer to tempt you away, Robert Gadling. Hob felt another shudder run through him in response to that voice literally made to seduce. Well, that's just playing dirty. His reaction, not lost on his companion, Hob felt a smirk pressed into his neck. Still unwilling to give in so easily, however, he swallowed past his arousal and arched an unimpressed brow at Morpheus. Hob had centuries of experience with restraining himself from snogging this infuriating being, after all. Dunno. Joe told me about a poetry reading that I'm half tempted to go to, he mused. Morpheus released a growl that shot right to Hob's cock, while those deceptively delicate fingers ran along his back. Hob had several recent experiences that proved how strong those hands truly were, and just the reminder made him weak in the knees. One day I shall meet this Joe, and he will see you are mine. Hob rolled his eyes affectionately. Who knew the anthropomorphic personification of dreaming could be so possessive? Then again, he could have guessed. And as I reiterated to you, love, Joe is happily married, and there's someone in my life I'm far more interested in, Hobbs said, pointedly placing his hands on Morpheus's waist. This addition to their relationship was still relatively new, and it seemed like Hobbs wasn't the only one who needed occasional reassurance that he was desired. Morpheus released a petulant huff against his neck while his fingers began to dip beneath Hobbs' shirt tail, which was good because Hobbs knew that if Morpheus faced him, Hobbs would be hit with those starlit eyes that try to consume him, but bad because Morpheus didn't really have any reservations against tripping Hobbs then and there. Yeah, maybe it was time to make their exit before they were threatened with an indecency charge again. Hobbs didn't want to have another conversation in which he attempted to explain why blowing sand into people's eyes should not be a go-to move in the face of minor inconveniences. He first met Joe when he overheard the art history professor ranting about how Shakespeare was a hack during a holiday get-together for faculty. "Finally, someone who gets it," Hobbs exclaimed, striding over to where Joe had been gesturing wildly and nearly sloshing his drink on some poor sod who simply looked on with resigned amusement. Later, he learned that said poor sod was Joe's husband, Nicky, who taught in the religious studies department and who had heard this rant countless times at this point. Joe's eyes lit up at Hobbs' remark, and the two men proceeded to engage in lively conversation while Nicky serenely sipped his champagne and interspersed their discussion with occasional dry comments of his own. The three of them had often grabbed a pint after work since, bemoaning the most recent paper they were handed that was clearly written the night before, or sharing the latest gossip from their respective departments. Hobbs was fond of the pair, despite his wariness of forming close relationships, given his inevitable need to disappear once everyone around him started to age. He had even debated introducing them to Morpheus at some point. Bastard really needed to get out and learn how to interact with humans that weren't Hobbs, and was trying to feel out the likelihood of Morpheus throwing sand in Joe's eyes out of a fit of jealous pique. But before he could even broach the prospect of a potential meeting with the people in question, things took a rather unexpected turn. Hobbs wasn't expecting to be jumped on an ordinary Saturday night as the three men drunkenly stumbled toward Hobbs' flat to continue their conversation on Nisar Kabbani's poetry. It's possible Hobbs fell into the self-sabotaging vice of reading romantic poetry during one particular century in which he couldn't get starlit eyes out of his mind. He definitely wasn't expecting a bullet to lodge firmly in Nicky's skull and two more into Joe's chest while Joe is in mid-recitation of his favorite poem, and he certainly wasn't expecting both men to rise as bullets popped out of their bodies and Hobbs shook off his own bullet wounds to fight off the masked men currently attacking them. When the three of them had successfully dispatched their assailants, they stood panting and bloody and simply stared at each other for a long, uncomfortable beat. "Well, fuck me," Hobbs finally said calmly. So... By mutual agreement, the three men were silent while they discreetly made their way to Hobbs' flat and processed their rather shocking revelation. Now they were all showered and changed into some of Hobbs' clothes and had been staring at each other over a couple of pints Hobbs was grateful he had in his fridge for the past minute or so. But Hobbs had never been good at sitting in silence, unlike someone he knew. Finally, he cleared his throat awkwardly. "You too, huh?" "Yeah, but we're confused," Joe said slowly as he turned his bottle in his hands and pressed himself close to his husband from where they were sitting on Hobbs' worn couch. And were they actual husbands, or was that a cover? What was Hobbs thinking? Of course they were husbands. No one was that good of an actor. "We never dreamed of you." Hobbs' eyes narrowed, and he found himself tensing. So he was a bit overprotective of Morpheus since learning what happened while they were separated. Sue him. "What do you know of dreaming?" Joe and Nicky exchanged unreadable glances, in sync as always. We dream of each other when one of us dies, Joe explained with some hesitation. It helps us track each other down. Some of us think it's a mere coincidence. He shrugged before Nikki cut in with that quiet gravitas he exuded so effortlessly. I believe it is destiny. Destiny, Hub repeated, half hysterical. Of course. Now it was Joe's turn to narrow his eyes. What does that mean? Oh, let's just say I know a thing or two about destiny, Hub replied with a flippant wave of his hand before taking a generous gulp of his beer. And by that I mean I'm dating his brother. What the actual fuck? Oh, Morpheus had some explaining to do when next they met. There was no way he didn't know of this. But why have we never dreamt of you? Joe said, returning to his earlier comment and leaning forward. I think I'm a bit of a different immortal, more a pet project, an experiment, if you will, that got a bit out of hand, Hub replied with a rueful smile. Nikki cocked his head. We didn't know there were others. Hob arched a brow. Neither did I. They lapsed back into silence and quietly sipped their respective drinks. When Hob's cat Buttons made an appearance and crawled into his lap, he began mindlessly petting her while he gathered his thoughts. His mind was racing at the prospect of other immortals, and ones that seemed to be interconnected at that. Unsure of where to begin with his queries, and not wanting to inundate them with questions, he started on safer ground. So, how long have you two known each other, then? Since the Crusades, Joe replied with a smile. Hob choked on his drink. So much for safer ground. And you're in love? He blurted out, gesturing to the two of them incredulously, and not naming the elephant in the room. He let out a quiet apology and returned to petting his lady while she made her displeasure known at the interruption while his mind continued to boggle. Nikki reached over and squeezed Joe's hand, gazing at him with such love-struck eyes, Hub almost felt like he was intruding. It took some time for me to understand the error of my beliefs, but once I did, I couldn't help but fall in love. Don't forget the mutual murdering. Took a lot of that, too, Joe added with a grin and a wink. And okay, wow, not something Hob would ever expect to act like some kind of inside joke, but to each his own, he supposed. And he thought his love story was weird. Right, he said faintly before shaking his head. And there are others? Who's the oldest? How did the dreams work? What have you been doing all these centuries? He winced. Well, so much for taking it slow. A shadow seemed to pass over both men, and Hob regretted not sticking with the safer topic and one question at a time. Technically, there are six of us still alive, but it's complicated, Joe murmured, eyes downcast. Still alive? What the fuck does that mean? Aren't they immortal? So, are all of you professors then? Hob asked with a forced levity. In an attempt to salvage the conversation. Next thing you'll tell me is that Percy over at the philosophy department is one of yours. A ghost of a smile crossed Nikki's lips before it slipped away. No, and we aren't ones either, ordinarily. We are a group of fighters. Me and Joe have been undercover, trying to track down an organ trafficking ring. Suppose we're getting close, if tonight is any indication. Ah, that would explain it. I worked hard to cover my tracks after some less than pleasant experiences, so I didn't think they were after me, Hob said with a grimace. Nikki and Joe swapped another glance. We know a bit about those. The tense atmosphere seemed to grow more taut, so Hob drained his pint for lack of anything better to do and rose to grab some more bottles for all three of them. Once he settled back down and Buttons resumed her previous position, Joe cocked his head. So, how long have you been around? Oh, since the 1300s, Hob replied with a lazy wave of his hand and a hint of surreal giddiness at admitting it. Joe grinned, some light returning to his eyes. So, Shakespeare? Guessing there's a story? Boyfriend stealing twat, Hob muttered into his drink. You too? Joe asked with a bark of laughter, while Nicky rolled his eyes. Hub finally found himself relaxing as they entered into what would hopefully remain safer territory, even if this particular memory was far from funny at the time. My date walked out on me the moment that fucker began waxing lyrical in that boyish, overeager voice of his. Can you believe it? Okay, fine, technically it wasn't a date. But still, Hob had a right to be bitter. Will you believe it if I told you he stole some of my best lines of poetry and then tried to use them on Nicky? Joe asked, leaning forward with a conspiratorial grin. Hob snorted. Course he did. Talentless prick. Literally had to make a deal with a magical being to be so successful. Joe and Nicky blinked at him. Come again? Oh, right. Hob rubbed the back of his neck sheepishly. You know my partner I've told you about? Mo? Yeah, that's not really his name. In near synchrony, Nicky and Joe cocked their heads in interest as Hob explained their history. There was something oddly liberating about telling his tale, one he had never before been able to share if he didn't want to end up hanged or locked up for insanity. But Joe and Nicky got it, even if they were wide-eyed, learning that there were magical beings out there, and it might be a lot to take for Nicky's poor medieval Catholic heart, if the way he was muttering what sounded like prayers in Latin was any indication. Get in line. How did they think Hob felt when he learned that not only was Lucifer real, but also the love of his life publicly humiliated and subsequently taunted them the last time they'd interacted? I don't understand, Joe shook his head. We've been around for centuries and never even knew there were beings or magic outside of Allah, and I doubted even his existence at times. I think they're usually better at hiding it, Hob shrugged. Though Morpheus couldn't blend in to save his life. He brightened, remembering the suggestion he was going to propose before everything blew to shit. Speaking of, you guys want to meet him now that I won't have to talk out of my arse to cover the fact that he's definitely not human? Do you think he would mind if we ask questions? Joe asked. Maybe he'll have an idea of how we are, what we are. Hob scowled at the reminder. Oh, don't worry, I plan to interrogate him myself. Morpheus! Hob shouted as he stormed through the throne room, brimming with exasperation. One of the drawbacks of dating the Dream Lord was he was inexplicably allergic to technology, which forced Hob to track him down in his dreams when he wanted to see the infuriating bastard before their next agreed-upon meeting. Like, for instance, to tell him off for not informing Hob that he wasn't the only immortal that existed. Uh-oh, someone's in trouble, Matthew squawked, hopping off Morpheus's shoulder and gliding over to Hobbs. Hey, Matthew, Hobbs said distractedly, without breaking his stride. While it took a moment to get used to a fucking talking raven, Hob had quickly moved on and lumped it with the usual weirdness that accompanied Morpheus. Speaking of the bastard, it's not fair how effortlessly attractive he could look, slouched on his steps like some sort of fallen angel. You would really think a ruler of a realm would actually want to sit in his throne once in a while, but nope, not Hob's ridiculous lover. A faint smile graced Morpheus's lips as he looked up from the tome he had been studying. Hob, this is an unexpected pleasure. Oh, you may not think that in a second, you arsehole, Hob growled, leaning down to poke him in the forehead. And the personification of dreaming should really not be allowed to pout so adorably. Why didn't you tell me there were others like me? There is no man so unique as you, Hob Gadling, Morpheus pronounced, as he smoothly rose and snapped shut the book. Fighting back the fissure of pleasure at such forthright praise, Hob scowled and crossed his arms. Don't try to flatter me, you prat. When were you going to tell me there were other immortals out there? Morpheus blinked. I suppose it had slipped my mind. Who have you met, then? Mad Hetty? Try Joe and Nicky. Morpheus's brow furrowed. Your professor friends? Yeah, they're a bit more than professors, considering how they rose from the dead before helping me kill a group of men who ambushed us without breaking a sweat, Hob exclaimed, throwing his hands up in exasperation. In a blink, Morpheus had bridged the space between them, gripping Hobb's shoulders as his eyes filled with starlight, like they were wont to do when his emotions overwhelmed him. "You were attacked. Were you harmed?" Softening, Hobb grasped one of Morpheus's hands and pressed a gentle kiss to his knuckles. "Can't die, remember, love?" "Yes, but as I once said, you can still be hurt or captured." And at those words, a shadow fell over Morpheus's face that Hobb endeavored to banish with a soft brush of his lips to his love's temple. Fighting back the fury and misplaced guilt he experienced whenever reminded of the hell Morpheus faced for over a century, Hobb drew Morpheus into his arms. "I'm okay. Promise, love." It took a long moment, but eventually the dream lord melted and slowly wrapped his arms to return the hug. Burying his nose in Hobb's neck, Morpheus simply breathed him in while Hobb did the same. "There are other immortals. This is true," he finally confessed, his voice a whisper against Hobb's skin. "Linked by death, destiny, and myself. It is a long story, I suppose." "And you will be telling me it all," Hobb demanded, drawing back just enough to shoot Morpheus a half-hearted glare while still clinging onto his arms tightly. The dream lord gazed at him with a small indulgent smile that seemed to read, "Oh, you adorable human." Hobb would be more offended if he wasn't dealing with a being of immeasurable power and uncountable years. "As you wish, my lover." A pleased warmth spread through Hobb's chest at such easy acquiescence. That trust was hard won. "I suppose it's nice to know I'm not the only one out there," Hobb shrugged as he stroked restless hands along Morpheus's arms, trying to convey his adoration through touch. "Indeed. And here I thought I was special," Hobb said with a wink. Morpheus brushed a thumb along Hobb's cheek. "You are. Far more than you may ever know." And oh, damn this man and his effortless sincerity. Hobb guided Morpheus into a gentle kiss that he happily returned, and they passed a few pleasant moments soaking in each other's touch. He would never grow tired of this, the way Morpheus grew lax and malleable with every passing brush of their lips, that marble skin warming beneath Hobb's touch, those painter's fingers gently guiding Hobb where he wanted. Yes, Hobb could pass centuries right here in the arms of his stranger. Eventually, they separated again, and Hobb ran an appreciative glance along Morpheus's body, from his ruffled hair and haphazard clothes to the way he seemed to be straining to bridge the distance between them once more. And yes, Hobb would gladly return to Morpheus's arms, because dream sex with the Lord of the Dreaming was at a whole other level. But first he shot Morpheus an impish grin. "So, now that I can introduce you as the Dream Lord Morpheus, and not my boyfriend Mo, you want to meet them?" Morpheus paused in his reach toward Hobb and furrowed his brow. "Mo? Who is Mo?" Nikki and Hobb watched on with indulgent amusement, Nikki, and a tinge of worry, Hobb, while Morpheus and Joe silently sized each other up. "So you're the guy who ran out on Hobb for daring to call you a friend?" "I am not a guy," was Morpheus's retort, because he lived to be contrary. "And you are the man who has so enamored my love with your talk of poetry and art."
"Does he always talk like that?" Nikki asked, leaning over to Hobb.
"Unfortunately," Hobb replied, lips twitching, as Morpheus turned to shoot him an injured glance. "The sad thing is, he thinks he's making his usual coat into a shorter trench coat, balances it all out, and helps him blend in as a human. I'm too enamored to tell him differently."
"I can hear you, my lover," Morpheus rumbled.
Hobb simply blew him a kiss and a wink. "What?" Riling Morpheus up was one of Hobb's favorite pastimes, and honestly, it was far too easy. Hobb couldn't help himself.
"You do seem to have been touched by my sister," Morpheus mused,
returning to studying Joe in a way that meant he was seeing beyond human perception. Hob was impressed that Joe stood his ground in the face of that piercing gaze. It could be a lot to handle.
"Your sister?" Nikki asked. "Death."
Joe choked on his tea. Hob figured tea would be better for this particular meeting. "I'm sorry, your sister is death." Next to him, Nikki seemed to pale, and his fingers tensed from where they had been calmly petting buttons.
Morpheus turned back to Hob with a frown. "You did not tell them of my siblings."
Hob shrunk beneath Joe's accusing glare while Nikki looked like he was 1 second from fainting. Poor Reformed Catholic.
"Oops," Hob shrugged.
"What was it you three spoke of when you learned of your true natures?" Morpheus demanded.
Funniest deaths?" Hob shrugged, scratching his cheek. "Plus a lot of gossip about you."
Morpheus clearly didn't know what to do with that piece of information, if the way he opened and shut his mouth was any indication. And oh, how Hob loved drawing reactions out of the Dream Lord that were so very human.
Eventually, Morpheus turned back to Joe and Nikki. "I have several siblings. Death, desire, despair, delirium, destiny, and the prodigal."
"Destiny?" Nikki whispered. "Do you know if—"
"Yes. It is a long tale, but many millennia ago, Death, Destiny, and I made a bargain of sorts. It is mostly Destiny and Death's game, and I am simply the final piece that helps you find each other through your dreams. I am rather pleased it has worked so well."
Joe and Nikki stared at each other wide-eyed, and Hob felt a surge of sympathy, distinctly recalling that first century when he realized that he might be a pawn in an immortal's game.
"But what's our purpose?" Nikki asked, rising. "Why us? What's the goal?"
Morpheus gazed at Nikki with fathomless eyes.
"You would need to seek my brother and sister for such answers. I cannot help you."
"Right," Joe mumbled numbly, walking over to Nikki.
He said. "See you Monday, Hob," he finished with a weak smile, while both men made a fast retreat.
Hob watched them leave with a sigh. Like he said, they really needed to work on Morpheus's people skills. When he turned back to Morpheus, he was staring at the door with a slight frown.
"Did I upset them?"
Hob locked the door before walking over to wrap his arms around Morpheus's waist. "I think it's just hard for you to understand that these types of revelations can be a lot for us poor humans," he explained. "Think back to how shell-shocked I seemed to be on our second meeting." Morpheus's eyes grew distant and he nodded slowly.
I see."
At the reminder, Hob stepped back and took a shaky breath, pacing over to a window that looked down on the busy street. The question that had been gnawing at him ever since he discovered Morpheus's knowledge of Joe and Nikki's immortality finally crossed his lips. "Why me? Why were you so interested in learning about my experience, but never theirs?" Though he moved silently, Hob could sense Morpheus as he came to stand behind him. Centuries of acquaintanceship would do that.
"They were always more Death and Destiny's game than my own, and Destiny's dealings are often too complex for me to care to delve deeply into. I forget about them until Destiny decides that it is time for another to be touched by Death and the dreaming."
Hob felt a gentle brush along his back, but he continued to study the streets below, unable to meet those eyes just yet.
"When I crossed paths with you, it was at a time when Death thought it would do me well to better understand those I served."
Hob released a quiet snort. "Really?" He couldn't see why. Morpheus ignored his interruption and pressed a kiss to Hob's neck.
"And I was curious. You seemed so confident that you would not wish for death, and I found that of interest. So death offered to grant you your wish."
Finally caving, Hob turned and found Morpheus staring at him with an intensity that stole his breath. Morpheus reached forward and brushed an errant strand of hair out of Hobbs' eyes.
I expected it to be a passing fancy. I expected you to beg for death. I expected to grow bored of the experiments, but I found myself fascinated by you, despite myself.
Hob laughed wetly at that final remark. You really know how to make a guy feel special. Morpheus stepped forward and tilted Hob's chin to meet his burning gaze.
As I have said before, you are far more important than you will ever know.
He placed Hob's hand over Morpheus's heart, which he was fully aware was only beating because the Dream Lord currently willed it to.
I am yours, as much as you are mine. I have been yours for centuries, although I did not at first see it.
Oh, damn this man. Speechless, Hob grabbed Morpheus by the lapel of that stupid trench coat and dragged him into a desperate kiss. Morpheus went willingly but quickly gentled it to something softer, something that brimmed with unnameable emotion. When they paused for breath, Hob pressed their temples together and worked to gather his frayed nerves. Morpheus gently ran his fingers through Hob's hair before speaking once more.
The names for what I feel go far beyond human language. But if I were to put words to it, then you must know I love you, Hob.
Oh, bloody hell. I love you, you gorgeous, stubborn, ridiculous bastard, Hob declared, a spark of delight running through him at the look of consternation on Morpheus's face, like he wasn't sure if he had just been insulted or not. Oh, come here, Hob laughed, dragging Morpheus back into a kiss. It was a while before they broke apart again. Things went back to normal after that. Hob's version of normal, at least. As promised, Joe and Nikki met up with Hob on Monday, still looking slightly shaken, but after a couple of drinks, things relaxed between them again. It took some time before Morpheus was added into the mix once more, Hob assuming correctly that Joe and Nikki needed some time to process their revelations. When the four of them did meet, Morpheus was able to soften his image slightly when he was caught whispering gently to Buttons and shared the story of how he was overpowered and outwitted by a 21-year-old, her great-grandmother, and his librarian. And with the help of Hob, Joe and Nikki were able to shut down the trafficking ring and enjoy the rest of the year as completely normal, absolutely mortal human professors. It was on a fine spring day that Hob, Joe, and Nikki were walking across campus and trading the historical inaccuracies that annoyed them the most when they passed two men with opposite aesthetics fairly close to Hob and Morpheus. The parallel catching his eye, Hob slowed down, which caused him to overhear some of their conversation while Joe and Nikki shot him questioning glances.
Swear, Angel, if you get arrested again, and this time because of a stupid book, I'm not bailing you out again.
The man in sunglasses groaned, throwing his head back and shoving his hands into tight pockets.
That was one time, and as we noted, the French were slightly tetchy during that revolution of theirs, so it really wasn't my fault, the posh bloke retorted huffily. And it's not a stupid book, it's...
While the pair continued their argument, Nikki, Joe, and Hob came to a stop and exchanged silent stares. Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Chapter 2.
There are more, Hob groaned, dragging his feet towards where Morpheus was studying one of his in-process creations by an abandoned coast. He didn't quite know how it worked. But whenever Hob went to sleep with the compulsion to see the Dream Lord, he was led right to where he was, for better or worse. He might have let out a less than manly shriek when he found himself facing a giant fucking Wyrvern at the palace gates one unfortunate evening.
More what? Morpheus asked distractedly, as he alternated between molding a towering nightmare's limbs into 20 tentacles or 20 sharp pincers. Hob grimaced. Hopefully neither formation made an appearance in his dreams anytime soon. Not that Morpheus would allow that to happen, of course. More immortals, at least I think so, talking about getting arrested during the French Revolution, Hob replied,
crouching in front of a sprightly little dream that shimmered in the light. He was always in awe of how his lover could produce creations of such great horror and such great joy. It was one of the dichotomies he loved most about him.
Oh, one of Joe and Nikki's immortal friends?
Morpheus hummed as he walked away, seemingly satisfied with settling on the compromise of 10 pincers and 10 tentacles before beginning maintenance on what really only looked like a gray blob so far.
Nah, still haven't met them, Hob shrugged. Niall and Andy have been up to something or other in Australia, and I told you what happened to the other two. These were two blokes reminded me of us, actually.
That piqued Morpheus's attention enough for him to turn to Hob expectantly.
Hob bit back a smirk, already anticipating how Morpheus might react to his next words.
One looked all soft and approachable, and the other was dressed all dark and broody like you.
Hob found pleasure in the small things, like how predictable his love was.
As expected, Morpheus looked affronted before protesting,
I do not brood, and none can dress like me. I conjure up my clothes.
Hob rolled his eyes fondly, fully aware that Morpheus was being deliberately obtuse, but now he looked thoughtful and frowned in the distance.
Did one have curly hair? And did the other wear sunglasses and have ginger hair?
Hob narrowed his eyes suspiciously.
Yes.
To his alarm, Morpheus released a quiet chuckle.
Aziraphale and Crowley, my, it has been some time.
As always, when Morpheus slipped into some cryptic shit, Hob crossed his arms and arched a brow, knowing he was missing some vital information. Care to fill me in? Morpheus floated towards Hob and cocked his head.
They are an angel and demon who are expected to fight on opposite sides. But it does not take too much time in their presence for one to see that they are anything but enemies. I wonder how they have fared after all this time.
Seemed fine to me, considering they were bickering like an old married couple, Hob said faintly as he processed this new information. So to summarize, after never meeting any other immortal being for 6 centuries, I'm now friends with 2 immortals who share dreams with other immortals and just ran into an angel and a demon. Meanwhile, I'm dating the anthropomorphic personification of dreaming. He paused and briefly wondered when exactly his life had turned into a full-fledged fairy story. About 600 years ago, he figured. I think I've gone mental, Hob concluded, scrubbing a hand over his face.
I believe you are far past that, my love,
Morpheus replied. Hob turned to glare at him while Morpheus returned his gaze innocently. You're not funny, you know. He fought back a smile at the twitch of amusement that danced on Morpheus's lips. I liked you better when you were a brooding, mysterious stranger who only knew how to smile when I saved his arse, he grumbled, crossing his arms.
Of course, darling. Was Morpheus's serene response, the bloody bastard, before he placed a gentle kiss atop Hob's head like he was some delicate thing that needed appeasement.
Fortunately, Hob had a pretty foolproof solution for when Morpheus decided to be a patronizing prick. After a long snogging session that left Morpheus sufficiently rumpled and Hob smugly satisfied, Morpheus played with the hair at the nape of Hob's neck and asked,
Would you like to meet them? Aziraphale has a lovely collection of books.
Hob perked up, recalling the countless hours he had spent in the Dreaming's library with Lucien at this point, surrounded by books written and unwritten. Through all the changes across the centuries, there was something comforting about the consistent presence of books. The way he could open up a text and feel like he was stepping through a window back into a faraway century or into an unfamiliar world. Half of his flat was made up of bookshelves, which didn't even account for all the books he had spread across the world in his various safe houses. The prospect of getting his hands on a collection curated by someone centuries older than him was too good to pass up, even if that being was an angel, he assumed, unless both entities enjoyed subverting expectations and palette colors, and Hob hadn't fully processed that fact yet. Think he has a Marlowe. Hob squinted as he attempted to decipher the hours posted on the door to A.Z. Fell's bookshop, which apparently was owned by an honest-to-God bloody angel. "I couldn't say for certain, but I think they're closed," he said hesitantly.
"No matter."
And with a blink, the door opened and Morpheus swanned through, Hob following at the roll of his eyes.
"Right, I forgot you're far above petty human laws."
"But of course."
Any further sarcastic retort died on Hob's lips in the face of rows and rows of bookshelves stuffed with tomes, ranging from fairly modern to utterly ancient.
"Bloody hell," he breathed, drifting over to the nearest shelf, fingers itching to touch but afraid he'd mar the beautiful spines.
"I'm sorry, but we are quite close."
Hob turned to where the angel now stood gaping at Morpheus, fingers gripping a book tightly and spectacles 1 second from slipping off his nose.
"Angel, where's that good brandy you've been hiding? It's Tuesday, and that seems like a perfect day of the week to—"
The demon stumbled to a stop beside Aziraphale, and as Hob lined up next to Morpheus and spotted his subtle smile, he rolled his eyes. Of course, the bugger was enjoying this.
"Dream! What an unexpected pleasure," Aziraphale stuttered.
"Dunno if I'd say that," Crowley muttered before releasing a sound that could only be translated as "nuh,"
when Aziraphale gently elbowed him. Morpheus bowed his head in greeting that showed him to be every inch the lord he truly was.
"Aziraphale, Crowley, well met. I hope you have been well these past few centuries."
Aziraphale shot a glance at Hob and released a nervous laugh.
"Centuries? Oh, dear me, you must have us mistaken. Is this an original Marlowe?"
Hob asked, pointing to the book he had spotted as Aziraphale had entered and eager to skip over any more hopeless attempts at passing for human. Seriously, how did these fools hide in plain sight for so long? Was there some kind of glamour Hob was immune to?
"It's just I lost the one Marlowe gifted me after..."
He waved his hand to encapsulate one of the worst centuries of my life when I lost everyone and everything I loved, and even my date ran out on me. Now, Aziraphale and Crowley were staring at him, and though he couldn't see past those sunglasses, Hob was sure the demon's eyes were just as wide as Aziraphale's.
"You knew Marlowe?"
"Course, and let me tell you, he was leagues better than that twat Shaxbird," Hob grumbled, leaning against the wall and crossing his arms.
Aziraphale puffed up indignantly.
"I say, Shakespeare was a genius, and I will not stand for you tarnishing his good name."
Hob scoffed. Of course, an angel would like all of his flowery words and ignore the lies hidden beneath. He turned to the demon, hoping he would side with him at least.
"I like the funny ones," Crowley shrugged. "Needed some help with that Hamlet play, though. But I owed Aziraphale a favor, and it wasn't too much trouble."
"Seriously, were any of his ideas original?" Hob demanded, throwing his hands in the air.
Aziraphale seemed ready to have a scathing retort when Crowley cut in.
"So who's your friend, Dream?" he asked,
cocking his head with interest. Hob had to stop himself from shifting uneasily. Something about being under that gaze, even when it was buffered by shades, was slightly disconcerting. Though this was a demon before him, the way he slouched, with hands stuffed in his two tight pockets, almost made him look human until Hob was pinned by his gaze.
"This is Robert Gadling,"
Morpheus shared, like he was announcing Hob's presence at a royal ball.
"He is my lover and my friend."
The angel and the demon stood blinking at Morpheus for a long moment.
"Yeah, I gotta find that brandy," Crowley muttered, walking away.
A few minutes later, found Hob drinking a bloody good brandy, aged to perfection, sprawled in a cushioned chair while Morpheus sat perched upright beside him. Meanwhile, Crowley was taking a generous gulp of his drink from where he was pressed so close to Aziraphale on the couch, their thighs nearly touched. Hob narrowed his eyes, noting how the back of their hands brushed against each other in what could look like an accidental gesture if Hob hadn't lived through centuries of homophobia and hidden trysts. "So how long have you two been together, then? And how does that work, an angel and a demon?" Hob asked, figuring it was best to just rip the bandage off. Aziraphale sputtered and both entities sprung apart, so they now sat on opposite sides of the couch. Hob felt a pang of sympathy for them. Poor buggers. Two men loving each other was one thing, but Hob could only imagine the taboo of an angel and demon falling in love. Morpheus cocked his head and studied them with that piercing gaze, which caused even these all-powerful beings to shrink away. Hob wondered at their history, at the flash of fear in Crowley and Aziraphale's eyes when they first spotted Morpheus. This was what he got for going in blind and only asking which was the demon and which the angel.
It seems congratulations are in order. I always thought you two would make an excellent match, though your paths ran so contrary to each other.
Crowley seemed to bristle, and a tongue shot out to wet his lips that Hob noted with slight alarm was forked.
Funny. You didn't seem so supportive of us the last time we ran into you.
Hob shot an exasperated glance at Morpheus. Oh, bloody hell, what did you do now?
Morpheus tilted his head in acknowledgement. I must admit you surprised me, little serpent. You and your audacity. What I caught you both doing could very well have gotten you killed by either side of your little celestial feud.
Little celestial feud? As in heaven versus hell? Hob drained his glass as he was once more confronted by the familiar reality of being far out of his depth, a consequence of dating a being like Morpheus.
Dare them to try again, Crowley grumbled into his glass.
Morpheus cocked his head in question, and when it was clear Crowley wasn't willing to clarify if the way he was chugging his brandy was any indication, Aziraphale cut in.
We know you were away for a bit, Dream. So, in case you didn't know, there was a little attempt at Armageddon that culminated in both of our failed executions.
So I am not the only reason Lucifer has been so discontent,
Morpheus hummed. Discontent? Is that what we're calling it now? And sorry, did he just say Armageddon? Oh, bloody hell. Hob bit back a whimper and tightened his grip on his glass that was sadly empty.
What did you two do?
Nothing, Crowley blurted out. And both sides are leaving us alone, and we're both on our own side now. And if you have something to say about that, you can bugger right off, he declared before snatching Aziraphale's hand and glaring down at Morpheus in an act of defiance. Hob arched a brow, impressed at his foolhardy courage, even if he could barely follow along with what the fuck he was saying.
Peace, Serpent of Eden, Morpheus soothed with a raised hand.
Hob choked on air and gaped at Crowley.
Serpent of Eden? Bloody hell, he really regretted not asking any follow-up questions now.
Damn bastard distracted him with the temptation of books.
I have no wish to harm you, and never have. I am lord of my own realm. What Lucifer's and the Silver City's subjects do on their own time is of no consequence to me.
Both celestial entities watched Morpheus warily before nodding and shifting closer to each other once more.
How recent is this addition to your lives?
Why do you care?
Crowley asked, still suspicious, even as he melted into the gentle strokes Aziraphale was now running through his hair. Morpheus gazed at Hob silently, and Hob arched a brow, unsure what he was looking for.
I have been reminded recently that one such as I can have connections such as friends and love. And it is customary to ask about the relationships of one's friends if it is not too late to call you mine.
Oh, this man. Hob reached over and squeezed Morpheus's hand, chest filling with warmth, before Morpheus turned to Crowley and Aziraphale once more, who sat gaping at him.
Before our last confrontation, I rather enjoyed your visits to the dreaming Crowley and the conversations the three of us would hold when I visited the waking world. I regret how things ended between us.
Ah, look at this stubborn git almost apologizing in the span of 2 years, or three times if Lucien was to be believed, which she always should be.
Now Hob called that growth. He squeezed Morpheus's hand and beamed at him, hoping his pride shone through. If that secret smile crossing Morpheus's lips and his dipped head was any indication, Hob's message was received. Crowley's expression finally seemed to soften, and his shoulders slowly relaxed. Yeah, well, us too, I guess, he mumbled into his glass, before scowling when he noticed it was empty. With a snap of his fingers, everyone's glasses were refilled, and Hob hummed happily, while studiously ignoring the fact that his alcohol was just delivered to him through magic? Hell? Power? Honestly, you'd think he'd be used to all of this shit after being around Morpheus for so long, but this was the second time in so many days when Hob wasn't sure if he hadn't cracked or not. That would happen when one lounged in a bookshop sharing drinks with an angel and demon in love and the personification of dreaming, who he also happened to be dating. Angel. Demon. What was Hob forgetting? Oh, fuck. I'm sorry, but did you say Armageddon? He blurted out. Aziraphale and Crowley blinked at him like they almost forgot he was there, which made sense, he supposed. Yes, though only those who were closely involved would remember it as such. Your sister was there, of course, Dream, Aziraphale mentioned, casual as you like, as though he hadn't just thoroughly tilted Hob's world on its axis and launched him into a quiet panic. Morpheus nodded.
Yes. She informed me of the four children who bravely faced down the horsemen of the apocalypse, though I had not known of your subsequent attempted executions.
Hob gaped at him.
And you are going to tell me this when?
Morpheus frowned.
I did not think it pertinent since the event never came to pass.
Hob tilted his head back to pray for strength, only to remember who exactly he was in the room with. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Your sister has some explaining to do next girls' night, he muttered in lieu of anything better to say, and muttering was a generous descriptor since it most definitely sounded more like a whimper.
I still do not know how to feel about these girls' nights.
Then good thing you're not invited, Hob replied cheerfully.
Girls' night was one of Hob's favorite times of the month, in which Calliope, Death, and Hob got together to drink, paint nails, do hair, and of course gossip about Morpheus. Was it surreal to paint the nails of the anthropomorphic personification of Death, who also happened to be his partner's sister, while his partner's ex, who happened to be the literal Greek muse, did his hair? Yes. But as Hob established, he gave up on trying to make sense of his life a while ago, even if he still had moments of what the fuck, what the fuck, what the actual fucking fuck. And this was a moment that deserved at least one what the fuck. Possibly two. He drained his glass and relished in the burn as Hob processed the fact that the world would have ended if not for an angel and demon in love and possibly four children. Seriously, though, he reiterated, what the actual fuck?
Did we break him? Crowley asked.
Hob blinked at the demon, who seemed to be studying him like he was a particularly interesting animal he found in the wild. Hob would be more offended if he wasn't a fucking demon.
Hob has explained to me that at times humans need more time to process information that they deem surprising, and I suppose this fits that description,
Morpheus explained sagely.
You suppose?
Hob repeated with a laugh he could admit in retrospect sounded slightly unhinged. Gratified that his glass had been refilled once more, he took a generous gulp and applauded his self-control for not downing the whole bloody thing again.
So you're really dating this arsehole? How did that happen? Crowley demanded with a smirk.
Hob snorted into his drink, delighted by how quickly Crowley had moved past their initial animosity into teasing, while a hilarious look of offense crossed Morpheus's face. Shooting Crowley a grateful glance at the topic change, Hob relaxed into his chair.
Oh, it's mostly my own fault, he replied with a dramatic sigh. Tried wooing him for centuries, and now I can't get rid of him.
Morpheus scowled. I assure you, there are no attempts at ridding himself of me. In fact, just last night he spoke of...
Okay, that's enough of that, Hob hurried to say, rising to clamp a hand over Morpheus's mouth.
Dark eyes gazed up at him questioningly, so Hob replaced his hand with a quick kiss.
These poor bastards really don't need to know about our sex life, love.
I was simply going to say that you spoke highly of your love for me.
Morpheus responded with a smug little smirk Hob wanted to wipe off his face right that instant. But since that would involve a rather more involved snogging session, Hob grumbled and squeezed himself onto Morpheus's chair instead, which he could thinly justify as retaliation, since it slightly marred Morpheus's otherworldly image. "Git," he muttered, though it sounded far too fond. The rest of the afternoon passed amicably enough without further incident, unless you count a Crowley turning into a snake and slithering inside Aziraphale's coat while Hob let out an incredibly manly shriek after Morpheus had shared the story of his and Lucifer's pissing contest and incident. He supposed a slightly saner person might, but, Hob didn't really belong in that category. It took some work on Morpheus's part to convince Crowley that Lucifer wasn't about to burn the world down around them in retaliation for his cheek, and by Morpheus he meant Hob and Aziraphale, since, as previous experience had proved, Morpheus was shit at comforting people. So once Crowley attempted to burrow even further into Aziraphale's jacket, Hob dragged the bloody Burke out of the room to give both entities some space. Hob was happily snooping amongst the bookshelves for the past few minutes when Morpheus finally sulked.
"I only said that it had been over a year at this point, and if Lucifer was plotting their revenge, they would have executed it by now."
Hob stepped forward and framed his lover's face with two gentle hands. "Yeah, except you then added that they had a tendency to hold a grudge, and it was possible they were biding their time before they retaliated," he replied patiently, "because you are absolutely shy at comforting people, you complete and utter ninny, which I, of course, say with all my love for you." Morpheus frowned.
"But is it not better to be truthful?"
"Oh, Lord, help him. Or not, Lord. Time? Lord? Hob was still foggy on some of the celestial details. Fortunately, Hob was saved from applying by Aziraphale and Crowley joining the pair walking hand in hand.
"I'm terribly sorry, but I believe we may need to cut this social call short. We would be delighted if you visited again later this week. If you were at all interested, however," Aziraphale said with a bright smile, while Crowley mumbled his agreement from where his face was tucked into the angel's neck.
"Yeah, sounds nice to me," Hob nodded, shoving his hands in his pockets while Morpheus hummed in agreement.
"Before we go, though, think I could purchase that Marlowe?"
"I can't believe a literal angel refused to sell me a fucking book," Hob grumbled when they walked into the street a few moments later.
"You clearly have yet to spend enough time with Aziraphale," Morpheus replied as he gently laced their fingers together and followed Hob's lead.
Eventually, they would have to hop on the tube to Hob's place, but for now he was content with strolling aimlessly through the lamplit streets. Forcing the Prince of Dreams and Shaper of Nightmares onto the tube was always the highlight of Hob's day. But as much as Hob adored new technologies, there was something peaceful and beautiful in the simple pleasure of walking hand in hand with the person you loved.
"Of course you would be friends with the only angel who's as big of an arsehole as you," Hob snorted.
A long beat of silence passed, and Hob shot Morpheus a sideways glance, wondering if he somehow insulted him. But Morpheus was frowning contemplatively down at their linked fingers before slowly saying,
"It was not presumptuous to ask for their friendship, then."
And as he spoke, Morpheus's eyes darted towards Hobbs, then away, as if seeking confirmation, but too nervous to wait for it. Oh, this poor bastard. A sharp ache shot through Hobbs' heart as he pressed a fierce kiss to Morpheus's knuckles.
"I think they're both happy to call you a friend, love."
After a heavy beat, Morpheus nodded and seemed to stand straighter despite his nearly perfect posture already.
"In that case, in my experience, most angels are arseholes, as you say, but not nearly as good company as Aziraphale."
"The best kinds of friends are the ones who are arseholes and good company," Hob agreed.
"I suppose that explains why I enjoy being in your presence so very much," Morpheus remarked with a sideways smirk.
Hob threw back his head and released a hearty laugh. Oh, gods above and below, how he loved this fucking bastard of his so very much. Chapter 3.
"So, you know those two guys we saw on campus the other day?" Hob asked.
"The ones we're pretty sure are immortal, with the one guy who dresses like Morpheus, Joe clarified, from where he was sketching what looked like buttons in a Victorian-style dress. Hob will absolutely be stealing that to put on his fridge before the night was out. Thank you. I tried mentioning that to Morpheus, and he got all grumpy. And then they both argued over who created the goth emo look first, Hob snorted. Wait, you met them? Nikki asked with a furrowed brow. Grateful that they decided to spend the evening at Hob's flat instead of the new inn, given the reactions he might face in a moment, Hob nodded and leaned back in his chair. Yeah, apparently they're old buddies of Morpheus. He shrugged before pausing until Nikki started taking a sip of his beer. Listen, he was a good guy, but telling a Reformed Catholic that he almost ran into a literal angel and demon and Hob had drinks with them was far too good to pass up, and he was going to savor the moment. Hob cleared his throat. They also happened to be an angel and a demon. And he really should have had a camera ready to chronicle Nikki's reaction. That's a wonderful invention, cameras. God, he loves them. It was a good minute before Nikki stopped coughing, despite Joe's thumps to his back. Hob honestly didn't know his face could look that red. Of course, Hob was no help as he snickered into his glass, utterly delighted, while Buttons retreated to somewhere quieter, which meant Hob would have to tempt her with treats to lure her back out later to resume her modeling. Worth it. An angel and a demon, Nikki eventually confirmed faintly. Face now ash white and looking like he was 1 second from hyperventilating, while Joe's face was a mixture of shock and concern. Yep. Hob confirmed, popping his pee while vaguely wondering if it made him an arsehole to continue being entertained by this. Not really what you'd expect out of an angel or demon, gotta admit, he mused with a scowl. He was still slightly bitter about that Marlowe.
Oh, madre de Dio, Nikki whispered.
That's funny, since most likely they both met God, Hob pointed out cheerfully while shoving down his own lingering existential panic at that fact. Oh, fucking hell. He had drinks with an angel and demon. He was never a devout man, but still you don't live through the Middle Ages without some lingering unresolved issues related to religion. Has anyone ever told you what an Ibn al-Kilb you are? Joe asked conversationally as he rubbed Nikki's back. Hob furrowed his brow while he fought to translate that. His Arabic was admittedly a bit rusty. Maybe he should start brushing up on it again with Joe and Nikki around, if they remain his friends after tonight. Though if he didn't mention the whole Armageddon business, his chances might still be good. And at that reminder, Hob gratefully finished off his scotch. Fumbling for a retort, Hob finally settled on, "Tel Hastis?" Joe barked out a laugh and replied, "I think I'll leave that to Morpheus." Hob beamed at his friend, loving when someone's matched him wit for wit. You both are disgusting, Nikki declared with the air of a long-suffering spouse. Even as his lips twitched, Hob was satisfied to see that some of his color had returned, and he had finally relaxed into Joe's touch. What? Sure, he was an arse, but he wasn't a complete arse, though there might be others who disagreed. But I agree with Joe's sentiment, ya cara. Nikki added with a weak glare as if to prove his point. Well, now I just feel bullied, Hob pouted.
Serves you right. Now I'm going to proceed to drain your liquor reserves, and we are going to change the subject before I submit to a complete mental breakdown, Nikki pronounced as he rose to follow through with his threat.
Yeah, fair enough, Hob nodded. He waited for a satisfying beat before asking,
So did you catch the football game last night?
Hob beamed as Joe released a pained groan and Nikki launched into a tirade in Italian. Hob had no hope of following. He loved his life. And then he said, Hob dropped his voice down a register and recited dramatically, Though my love of you is immense, I am still the shaper of nightmares. If you force me to wear that neon monstrosity, I will not claim responsibility for my actions. Calliope released a musical laugh while Death tittered into her glass. Even Lucien cracked a smirk she hid in her book. How Girls' Night came to be established was a long story. It took some time for them to be as comfortable around each other as they were now, but Hob was endlessly grateful that they stuck with it. Of course, it was awkward being around Calliope at first, once Morpheus had rescued her and disclosed their history with Hob. At that point, he and Morpheus had still been silently pining, and Hob had been terrified he was about to lose his dear friend once again. It said a lot about how far they had come that they were both able to sit down and have a conversation about it. Yes, a being whose existence transcended time and space, and a 600-year-old man learned how to communicate like adults. It only took a couple of centuries. Anyway, Morpheus told Hob his whole painful history, from Nada to Calliope to everyone in between. Hob was horrified, both at Morpheus's callousness but also at his suffering. How strange to experience such conflicting sentiments toward the same person. At that point, Morpheus had finally freed Nada from her imprisonment and asked for her forgiveness, but it took some reassurance to remind Hob that the man who had imprisoned a woman for 10,000 years for rebuffing him was not the same man before him. In return, Hob tore open his own wounds, some of which had barely begun to scab over, his first true love, Eleanor. Though Morpheus knew some of the tale, Hob never shared with him how when she laughed, the light in her eyes took his breath away, how when they danced, he believed no two people could ever fit together so perfectly. How when she was stripped from him, he broke every mirror in his suddenly empty house that now stood like a tomb, refusing to stare at his reflection without her standing beside him. But Hob didn't stop there. He told of Jimmy, an Irish lad so full of life, who was shot down in front of him during World War I. Of Leo, who tearfully left Hob with flowers in his hand, insisting they couldn't risk it, as the land raged against men like them. Of darling Penelope, whose father refused their match because Hob had no wealth to prove his worth, too consumed with dedicating as much as he could to charity in a time so drenched in death and misery. Of friendships lost and comrades killed. Of the darkness that cast a shadow over the world and which compelled Hob that much harder to find and cling to joy whenever he could, to spread and gift joy wherever he went. By the time Hob had wrung himself dry, he found himself cradled in Morpheus's arms. After a brief hesitation, he allowed himself to sink into the embrace and convince himself this was real, that his stranger returned to him, that unlike everyone in his life before, he wouldn't leave him. Not again. They shared their first kiss that night, both raw with emotion and stripped to the bone. Whether it was the right time was irrelevant. Sometimes you can't control how your emotions speak for you. It took some weeks afterwards for them to tentatively step into this new layer of their relationship and settle into it. It had taken missteps and stony silences and tense conversations to reach where they were now. But heaven and hell and everything in between, it had been worth it. Earth to Hob, you still with us? Hob blinked to find that he had frozen poised over Death's pinky finger. Sorry, he said sheepishly as he brushed a neat line of black along it. Got lost in my head. Let me guess, mooning over my idiot brother again? Death asked with the teasing light in her eyes. Can neither confirm nor deny, he mumbled, feeling his cheeks heat. Speaking of love, I have attempted to understand one of the ways humans channel their inspiration now, as you suggested, Hob, but I do not see how a competition can prove love, Calliope remarked as she carefully braided another strand of his hair. Hob furrowed his brow in confusion until a dawning realization came over him. He knew he should have given more direction than see what interests you on the telly. Calliope, he said slowly, turning around, please tell me you haven't been watching reality TV. Calliope cocked her head. What is reality TV? Bracing himself, Hob asked weakly, do you remember the name of this show? Her eyes grew distant. I believe it is called Love Island. Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Hob drained his wine and rose. That settles it then, he announced. I'm going to introduce you to good television so we can wipe that rubbish off your brain. Have you tried getting Dream to watch telly? I'd imagine he has some strong feelings about it, Death mused, as she followed Hob to the couch and settled with her feet in his lap while Calliope sat poised on his other side and Lucien silently perched in a nearby chair. Lucien was a relatively new member of Girls' Night. After months of coaxing, Hob finally convinced her to leave the library long enough to share a glass of wine and the latest gossip with them. It's good for her to have something in her life other than her job, though it's clear she's still trying to find how to fit in.
Oh, yeah, he's the biggest snob when it comes to telly, Hob snorted as he began painting Death's toes. So when I'm cross with him, I find the most egregious excuse for entertainment and watch that.
Oh, you're so bad, Death laughed with delight.
Bastard usually deserves it, is Hob's only response.
Like when he tried throwing out Hob's stash of wagon wheels because he claimed they weren't healthy for him, even though Hob can't die. Or when he failed to inform Hob that the raven he was talking to wasn't Matthew, a fact he didn't discover until Matthew cleared his throat awkwardly from behind him. Granted, to retaliate, Morpheus would give Hob the weirdest fucking dreams the next night, but it was still worth it.
My lord does have very particular tastes, Lucien remarked hesitantly, eyes wary like she was worried Morpheus would appear out of thin air to reprimand her for her insolence.
Hob will just pull out his spray bottle again if that happens. The expression on the King of Dreams, when he got sprayed in the face for being rude to one of his employees, was not an image Hob would soon forget.
Oh? Hob asked, delighted that Lucien finally entered the gossip session. Tell us more.
Lucien dipped her head and fiddled with the pages of the book she was reading. It's simply... She hesitated another beat before bursting out. I've attempted to introduce him to more modern novels, ones from the 19th or 20th centuries, but he refuses. It's completely unreasonable.
Hob rolled his eyes. Pretentious prick, he said fondly.
Unwilling to push Lucien too far out of her comfort zone, by encouraging her to gossip further, however, Hob reached over for the remote.
Now what should we watch, he mused, glancing between these three women-shaped beings and wondering what they'd like. What would the anthropomorphic personification of Death, a muse who had been imprisoned and abused for decades, and a magical librarian want? Then it hit him. Forget a show, he declared. We're watching a movie.
Hob watched out of the corner of his eye as Calliope leaned forward, enthralled, while Hiccup and Toothless flew through the sky.
And humans created this without ever encountering dragons, she asked.
Ignoring the implication that dragons might have actually existed in the world at some point, Hob nodded. Imagination and inspiration can be powerful things, as you know. Calliope hummed, eyes still following the complicated swoops and twirls of the boy and his dragon, with a look of childish delight across her face.
Hob understood her odd response. He was much the same when moving pictures were invented, and even more so when animation slowly developed to where it was now. Even Lucien seemed to have forgotten her book, a difficult task, and was watching the movie with a hint of a smile while allowing Hob to paint her nails a handsome mahogany to match her waistcoat. Meanwhile, Death was beaming from ear to ear and cheerfully snacking on crisps.
I love that we're making Girls' Night movie night too, Death cheered, raising her glass of red and downing it. Hob eyed her. He didn't think a being such as Death could get drunk, but you never know. She turned bright eyes to Hob. You know what we should watch next? If you say Mary Poppins, Mary Poppins. Hob sighed. I knew it.
Listen, he didn't have anything against the film exactly. To be honest, he remembered humming along to the music for days after seeing it for the first time. But Hob swore every time he saw Death, he was quoting a different line from that blasted film. In retrospect, he was surprised she hadn't proposed this sooner. Though if Hob was asked to be truthful, he supposed it wouldn't be that torturous to watch. In fact,
It was one of the first films Morpheus was interested in viewing after his imprisonment, and witnessing his face brighten as the characters danced with penguins and cheerfully sang was still a memory Hob revisited if he was in a dark mood. He glanced over at Calliope. Well, that settled it then. Fine, Hob decided, but I get to be lead singer during Chim Chim Cheree. Hob was finishing up his lecture and doing an excellent job at studiously ignoring the magical entity who'd been sitting in the front row for the entire hour. Checking the time, he leaned against the desk and gestured expansively. All right, we've got a few minutes left for questions. Hit me. Fortunately, the information he was covering was fairly straightforward, so there were only three or four questions if you ignored the hand that was sticking upright in the front row. Once he covered all of their inquiries, Hob nodded. All right, but that's all you have. Professor, Danny called out. I think there's someone in the front row who has a question. Hob felt his eye twitch, and he slowly turned to where Morpheus was watching him with a ghost of a smile across his lips. He loved Danny, he really did. Kid was brilliant. She also had the unfortunate tendency to fight for everyone's voice to be heard, which, fine, was only an unfortunate tendency in certain circumstances. Like when one's partner made a surprise appearance at one's lecture hall, presumably to make one's life unnecessarily difficult. Interesting. I don't recognize you, and hadn't heard there was anyone surveying this course, he remarked through gritted teeth. What's your question, may I ask? Listen, he loved Morpheus, obviously, delighted in seeing him, especially when it was unexpected. But when he arrived unannounced to Hob's lectures, with that keen gaze of his and that quiet smirk and that stupid hair, it was highly distracting and tempted Hob into wanting to do something unprofessional, like dig his hands into said stupid hair and snog him senseless against the desk. I thank you for calling on me, Professor Gadling, Morpheus murmured, and Hob swore that his voice was even more silken than usual, bastard. And then he had the bloody audacity to pull out spectacles. Where the fuck did he get those? And perched them on his nose as he looked down at the honest-to-God's notebook on his desk that Hob was 99% sure mainly contained sketches for future nightmares and dreams. I was wondering, can you elaborate on the correlation between the bubonic plague and anti-Semitism at this time period? Hob blinked. Wait, was Morpheus actually following along with his lecture? He bit back his smile and fought against the blush Hob could feel blooming across his cheeks. That will be addressed next class, so if you sign up for this course, you'll be able to learn more about it, Hob dragged out. Though there's no fucking way he would survive a full semester with Morpheus in class, so hopefully he won't take his comments seriously. He clapped his hands together. Now that's all the time for today. Remember to do your reading and notes for next week's discussion because, yes, I will notice if you're just making shit up. Dismissed. Hob stood rigid by his desk while all his students trickled out and Morpheus remained, seemingly doodling something in his notebook while still wearing those infuriating spectacles. Once the room was emptied out, Hob counted down from a minute, ignoring how Morpheus was now watching him serenely. Once a full minute had passed, Hob blew out a breath. You are a fucking arsehole, do you know that? Hob hissed as he frantically stuffed his work bag with his computer and papers and dragged Morpheus out of the lecture hall, coming here looking like sex on wheels, asking questions, wearing... He stopped in his tracks and whirled to face him, gesturing emphatically. Where the fuck did you find spectacles, anyway? I conjured them up, of course. Crowley mentioned he finds Aziraphale's spectacles sexy, even if he claims they are dumb, and I was curious if it would have the same effect on you. Hob released a low growl. Stupid demon, sticking his stupid nose where it doesn't belong, he grumbled, while he continued to drag his infuriating lover along. And yep, he was definitely blushing now. May I ask where you are taking us? Morpheus asked, while he followed Hob into the parking lot, unresisting. Hob declared as he threw his bag into the car and climbed in, are going back to my flat so I can fuck you into the mattress. He didn't need to see Morpheus's face as he slid in beside him to know that he looked smug as hell. No matter. Hob would wipe that expression off his face soon enough. Thank fucking God, that was his last class of the day. Several hours later, Hob was lying on his bed feeling extremely self-satisfied with himself, while a limp and very naked dream lord was sprawled across his chest.
I had believed that no sex could surpass what could be done in the dreaming, Morpheus finally mumbled drowsily.
You weren't thinking creatively enough, and you didn't sexually frustrate me enough, Hob hummed, smirking at the ties still hanging from his bedposts and the toy resting beside them. Morpheus simply grunted in response. Hob smiled in his hair and continued his gentle strokes along Morpheus's back, along his buttocks. You were so good for me, love, he murmured. Hob didn't miss the shudder that ran through Morpheus at his words, and something warm and pleased unfurled through his chest. Morpheus nuzzled Hob's throat. I should say the same to you. They continued to luxuriate in contented silence as they both rode the lovely endorphins sizzling through their veins.
Was it Crowley's idea to have you visit my classroom, too?
Hob eventually asked once his brain began to reboot. Morpheus nodded into his chest.
He will be pleased at the result,
Hob snorted.
What? Do you often visit to share tales of our sex escapades?
An awkward silence followed. Hob arched a brow and gazed down at the mess of dark hair facing him.
Morpheus? It is possible we talk of our latest excursions at times,
Morpheus replied delicately, tracing a finger along Hob's chest, which was probably intended to distract him.
You what?
He squeaked, mortification heating his cheeks. Morpheus finally propped himself up on an elbow so he could look at Hob properly, but Hob immediately missed their full contact. To solve this conundrum, Hob sat up and rested against some propped-up pillows, dragging Morpheus along so he was tucked between his legs, back pressed against Hob's chest. Morpheus settled into his nook with a contented sigh that Hob shared.
It is difficult to understand humans' embarrassment and privacy in regards to sexual intercourse,
he mused, while artist's fingers danced along Hob's legs, causing him to shiver with pleasure. Reminding his body that he may be immortal, but that didn't mean he was ready for another round just yet, Hob thumped his head against the headboard.
I can't believe I'm going to a car show with Crowley next week, fully aware that he knows what I've done in the bedroom. Would it make you feel better if you shared the same about me with Joe and Nikki when they return?
Morpheus asked, tilting his head so he could meet Hob's eyes.
Or I can help you visit their dreams so you can do as much and say hello. I know it might be difficult being away from them after a year of friendship.
Hob snorted into Morpheus's hair and hugged him closer to his chest. Of course, his love solution for long-distance friendship and or embarrassing sex stories was invading people's dreams. Unlike some people, they actually entered the 21st century so we can text and FaceTime whenever we want, he teased, delighting in Morpheus's petulant huff. But apparently there's been some drama with some members of their group, so they're sorting that out and then we'll visit again. And by drama, he meant a kidnapping and attempted murder that ended in a group pile of sobbing immortals, but, semantics. No one died, permanently, so it all worked out in the end.
Morpheus hummed. I am glad to hear it.
He began to wiggle around, and Hob was trying to understand his purpose when strong fingers found their destination. Hob froze and stared down into a pair of mischievous eyes dancing with starlight.
Something you want, love? Hob asked hoarsely. I have a few ideas in mind.
And damn this man, and his teasing smirk, with those lips just begging to be kissed. All thoughts of friends promptly flew out of Hob's head, and the rest of the evening was dedicated to a very different kind of conversation. Hob wasn't sure what he was expecting the rest of Joe and Nikki's family to be like, possibly similar to them, brimming with optimism and a determination to make the world around them better. So, in other words, similar to Hob, he supposed. Instead, a shadow seemed to follow the group as they all entered Hob's flat, looking around the place warily. It wasn't quite designed for so many people, but before he could offer alternative seating arrangements, Quinn, the woman who they had lost for so long, curled on the ground in the corner, eyes haunted. Buttons must have sensed something in the air because she wandered over to Quinn, meowing inquisitively before butting her head against Quinn's knee. A faint smile crossed Quinn's face, and she murmured something quietly before petting the cat. Andy stood tall and solid beside her, every inch the warrior of fame Nikki and Joe had painted her to be. But in her eyes, Hob could see the exhaustion of all her years. Niall, the youngest, entered looking bright-eyed and curious and immediately beelined to one of Hob's many bookshelves, muttering excitedly to herself. And then there was Booker, who slouched in, looking like he hoped if he was quiet long enough, no one would notice him. It had taken some convincing on Joe and Nikki's part to meet here rather than somewhere public, but given the potentially confidential topics they would talk about, i.e., you're immortal? Me too. It was decided Hob's flat would be as good a place as any. Hob dug out some cushions and pillows for anyone else to sit on before bustling over to start on some tea. This was probably a meeting that shouldn't include alcohol, and he was British, after all. While Hob debated what tea a group of immortals might like, he listened in on the conversation that floated around the corner. So yeah, like we said, this is Hob and Morpheus. Hob is just a different kind of immortal, and Morpheus is... Joe trailed off, and Hob couldn't blame him. It could be hard to explain Morpheus. Fortunately, or unfortunately, the man in question decided to introduce himself.
I am Lord Morpheus, Dream of the Endless, Lord of the Dreaming and King of the Nightmare Realms, Prince of Stories, Master of Dreams, and Shaper of Nightmares.
Hob groaned. Of course, this bastard decided to go with the most overdramatic intro ever. He's also a fucking drama queen, if you didn't notice. Hob called from the kitchen. He popped his head around the corner so he could catch the flash of irritation cross Morpheus's face before he smoothed it back out into something untouchable and ethereal. Hob grinned to himself while everyone else, other than Joe and Nikki, looked caught between whether they could laugh or not. And I'm the idiot who's in love with him, he added. Nice to meet you all. He exchanged nods with Andy and a wave with Niall before ducking back into the kitchen and hunting down a tray to place all the mugs on. Thankfully, he was a bit of a mug hoarder, so he had enough for everyone. Once all the tea was poured, Hob carefully walked back into the living room to find Andy and Morpheus stuck in a staring contest, while Andy lounged against the wall with her arms crossed, and Morpheus stood upright and rigid. You know, I was a god once, Andy remarked casually, as she accepted Hob's TARDIS mug. Sue him. When that show first came out, it was the coolest fucking thing he had seen in his life.
I am no god, Morpheus replied. I contain the entire collective unconscious within myself, so in many ways I am far more powerful.
Hob rolled his eyes as he handed Niall a cat-faced mug. This man, he swore. Right, she shrugged. Point is, I've been around, seen some shit, so I guess this makes sense. I'm still kind of lost, Niall commented with a tentative raise of her hand. Hob noted with approval that she was holding a volume of the Canterbury Tales in it. Woman had good taste. Though if she spilled tea on that book, Hob might just cry. Joe and Nikki tried explaining on our way here, but
you were chosen by destiny and death, I know not why. Once you died, I helped you dream of each other so you can come together. That is all I can say, Morpheus replied.
Well, it's more than I've learned in a millennia, so I'll take it. Andy eventually muttered, while Niall looked wide-eyed, and Booker poured what Hob assumed was vodka in his tea. Hob frowned at the sight. Tea finally dispersed, Hob scanned the room and settled on one of the cushions he brought out, so Booker and Andy could slouch in the chairs, and Niall, Joe, and Nikki could cram on his couch. It wasn't perfect, but it worked. Hob shot a glance towards Quinn, and was surprised to find Morpheus making his way to her and settling down about a foot away. Hob sat there awkwardly for a few minutes, making small talk with Joe, Nikki, and Niall, before finally turning to where Booker was staring broody into his tea. "So what's your favorite invention since you became immortal?" Hob asked as an olive branch. He knew things were still pretty tense between Booker and the rest of the immortals, so he was hoping some lighthearted chatter could help ease the conversation for him a bit. Booker snorted bitterly. "Better alcohol." Hob felt a spark of irritation run through him. "So that's all you've been doing then?" he demanded. "Just drinking your way through the centuries, when you could be eating ice cream and riding roller coasters and trying on sequins." Booker took a long drag from his flask, forgoing his tea altogether. "Not all of us have been living with a cushy job and cushy apartment and love," he replied darkly, nodding to where Morpheus had his head bowed, murmuring something to Quinn, and to the couch where Joe and Nikki sat. Hob froze mid-sip of his tea and slowly placed his cup down on the end table. The thing was, Joe and Nikki had told him everything that happened a year ago with Booker one tearful night, and all the ways they had tried to help him in the decades before everything blew to shit. And after his latest ordeal, when Booker had been allowed back into the group, Hob had assumed things had changed. He glanced over to where Nikki's head was lowered, and Joe was brimming with tension and felt a rising heat spread through his chest. Apparently not. This man had been accepted back into his family, and this was how he repaid them: by being the same miserable bastard as before. "So Hob, even-tempered, mild-mannered Hob?" Hob snapped. "Oh, fuck you," he hissed. "You think you're the only one who's suffered? The only one who's lost?" Booker blinked at him, and Hob could feel the room grow silent, but he couldn't be fucked to care. He released a bitter laugh. "You think you're special? I've lived centuries longer than you, boy, and you have no idea what I've been through. And now you come into my home claiming to have had it worse." Fury overwhelming him, Hob shot to his feet and dragged Booker with him. "You have no bloody idea what I've suffered, lad, what I've seen. But you can damn well believe that I never forced my suffering onto others and made it their problem." He snarled with a savage poke to the man's chest. "And you can damn well believe I fought tooth and nail to make amends for my mistakes, even if I know I should never be forgiven." Hob breathed through that pervasive guilt that always hung over him like a cloud, the echo of Morpheus's recriminating words ringing in his ears. "But would you take that choice away from others?" He took a shaky breath and grabbed an unresisting Booker by the collar and shook him. "You've been drowning in drink for so long, you never turned around to notice that you had a family right here waiting for you to just let them in. You've had a family who has done their goddamn fucking best to love you. And implying just because Joe and Nikki have each other means that you don't have them as well?" He stepped away with a harsh laugh and dragged shaking hands through his hair. "Do you know what I would have given to not be alone century after century? I wouldn't have given two flying fucks if everyone was paired off except for me, if it meant that I had a family who remained by my side. If it meant I wasn't alone." He pointed to where Joe and Nikki sat frozen. "Those two men have done everything they fucking could to include you in their lives and in their family, and all you've done is spit in their face. Not to mention Andy, the woman who took you in, kicking and screaming, who's done everything to keep you alive, even while she drowned in her own grief." He stepped forward again and lowered his voice to a hiss. "Maybe if you shoved your head out of your arse and flask long enough, you'd actually properly apologize and just try to fucking live, and try to fucking heal, and try to fucking see the joy that's knocking on the door of your miserable fucking existence before it's too fucking late." He took a deliberate step back.
Now I'm going to enjoy a nice evening with my friends and family. You're welcome to stay if you'll open your fucking mind. Otherwise, you can piss right off. As he finished his speech, gasping into the heavy silence that had fallen over the room, Hobb fully registered how overheated he felt, how much he was shaking, and contradicting his last statement as his mind filled with static, Hobb bolted away to the back of his flat and out to his balcony. He braced his hands on the rail once he stumbled outside and took a gasping breath of London air, closing his eyes as shudders fully overtook him. As he could have expected, the door quietly slid open, and who he knew to be Morpheus came up beside him. Hobb could feel those midnight eyes boring into him, even while his own were closed. "May I touch you, my love?" Hobb considered the question for a moment. He felt like one raw nerve, and he was slightly afraid that the lightest touch would make him flinch back, would make him scream. But even while he felt a desperate need to crawl out of his skin, Hobb also knew he needed touch right now, needed something to ground him. So through what he now registered were short, gasping breaths. He gave a jerky, hesitant nod. He braced himself for the burning touch of another skin, but instead the heavy weight of Morpheus's usual cloak, the one he never wore in the waking world, but which Hobb adored, settled around his shoulders. Hobb's breath stuttered as he was wrapped up in the soothing warmth of a peaceful dream. Fumbling fingers gripped the lapels to draw the coat closer against his chest, and he squeezed his eyes tighter, fighting back control of his body, of his mind. "Would you like my own touch now?" Morpheus asked after a long moment. Still feeling jittery but slightly more settled, Hobb opened his eyes and gave a slow, more confident nod. Immediately, he was wrapped up in Morpheus's solid embrace, and Hobb tucked his face into his love's neck, breathing in his scent of ozone and midnight dew. He focused on that smell, forcing his breathing to slow and even out, while Morpheus ran soothing fingers through his hair. Hobb wasn't sure how much time passed, but eventually, feeling more settled, he squeezed his arms around Morpheus's waist. "Thank you," he whispered. "There is nothing to thank," was the murmured reply. Hobb nodded, aware of that. This wasn't the first panic attack either of them had guided each other through, not after some of the things Hobb had seen and Morpheus's sentry in a cage. They were far past apologies and expressions of gratitude in these moments, but Hobb still felt the urge to express it anyway. "Would you like to talk about it, my love?" Hobb pressed his forehead to Morpheus's shoulder. Of course, he didn't want to rehash what caused him to run away in the first place. But he also knew from enough experience that sometimes that it was the only way forward. So with a sigh, Hobb tugged Morpheus down until they were seated on the balcony with Hobb tucked under Morpheus's arm. He studied the sky for a long moment, a pang at the stars lost to the light pollution filling his chest. One nostalgic evening, Morpheus swept Hobb away to an abandoned hillside, far from any kind of civilization, so Hobb could be reacquainted with the sky of his past. They made love under the stars that night, Hobb consumed with an adoration for this man who would bend the heavens for him if he could. And here he was, this incomprehensible being, doing something as simple as comforting Hobb through the tumult of his emotions. He took a slow breath, gratified to find it less shaking than before. I couldn't understand it. I've had some shitty decades, but I never once contemplated death, never once turned on those who offered me kindness. And if I had a he choked on the sudden grief. "If you had company all these centuries," Morpheus finished quietly with what Hobb might call regret in his voice. Hobb hid his face in Morpheus's neck. "I've loved my life, adored it, but there were times I just felt so goddamn—" The words dried up in his mouth. "Lonely," Morpheus finished, lips brushing the top of his head.
his arm tightened around Hob.
I am sorry for keeping my distance for so long, Hob. If I...
But Hob cut him off with a vehement shake of his head. Regret is a wasted emotion, he rasped. We can't turn back time. I know you had your reasons and fears, and we're here now, Hob insisted, contorting himself so he was spread across Morpheus's lap, with his face pressed into his chest. In this position, they could hug properly once again, and Hob needed that.
Yes, we are here now, Morpheus agreed, arms squeezing him tight. And I will not run away again, Hob Gadling. I swear on my realm.
Shuffling back into his flat was more than a little embarrassing, so Hob was gratified when Andy looked up and simply gave them a nod where she was curled up beside Quinn and Niall on the couch. Surveying the room, Hob noted Nikki and Joe's reddened eyes and Booker's conspicuous absence. Shit. He cleared his throat awkwardly. Sorry for fucking up the mood. But Andy shook her head. He needed to hear all that, she murmured. Not that I'm any better, but I'm trying. Niall squeezed her shoulder with an encouraging smile. Hob felt admiration fill him. She's so young. Already lost so much. But Niall was still brimming with the kind of optimism Hob has clung onto for centuries. He could only hope she didn't lose it. Would you like us to leave? Give you some space, Joe asked from where he was hovering by the doorway. Having his flat empty sent a flash of panic through him, so Hob shook his head. No, not really. If you all want to stay, we could. He scratched the back of his neck and gazed around the room before his eyes landed on one of the only shelves that didn't hold books. He felt a smile crack across his face. We could play a game. Playing Cluedo with a group of immortals, two of whom had never played it, turned out to be one of Hob's better ideas. Since there were limited pieces and new players, Quinn was assigned to Andy's team and Morpheus to Hob's. The knowledge that the look of concentration on Morpheus's face as he considered which murder weapon to choose was nearly identical to the one he wears when shaping dreams and nightmares will 100% be making an appearance during next girls' night. They're watching Moana and drinking sangria. There's a whole chart now. What made Hob even happier, however, was watching Quinn slowly relaxed and even cracked a smile after Nikki showed her a particular card. Though when it turned out that the answer to the mystery was Miss Scarlet in the library with the lead pipe, Morpheus expressed dismay at the prospect of bloodstains on the books, and Quinn murmured how the candlestick would have been more inventive and effective, which of course meant that it was time to find a different game before a demonstration was in order. So the night continued on into early morning. The Booker-sized elephant in the room going unacknowledged until the man in question slouched back in as the sky began to lighten. They were in the middle of a game of charades in which Hob was desperately attempting to get his team to guess platypus, when their laughter was cut short by Booker's entrance. He looked somehow worse than before, hair limp and face sallow. But he cleared his throat and met the eyes of everyone in the room before attempting to stand straighter. Everything he said was right. I gotta sort myself out. I know what I gotta do, and I'm gonna work to be the family you deserve. To Hob's surprise, given his vehemence, whenever invoking Booker's name, Joe rose to his feet first and dragged Booker into a hug. You don't have to do it alone. Hob caught before doing his best to avoid eavesdropping on what could turn into an emotionally raw conversation. It was just a bit hard to do when they were having it in the middle of Hob's living room. The rest of the group, sans Quinn, rose up to join the conversation, so Hob sidled over to where Quinn was watching them with dark eyes while petting Buttons. Those two hardly left each other's sides all night, and Hob couldn't be more thankful for Buttons' discernment. If you want, I can bring you to a shelter tomorrow. Get you a cat of your own. They make good company, Hob offered.
Quinn gazed down at buttons purring in her lap. I do not know if I can. We travel so much and fight even more. Bollocks that, Hob snapped before working to rein in his admittedly still raw emotions. He took a slow breath. Bollocks that, he repeated calmly. None of you even know why destiny chose you. Just because you were born warriors doesn't mean that's the only way to fight to make this world better. And you're no use to anyone if you don't allow yourself to enjoy life, too. He nodded to Buttons. I'm not saying you have to reevaluate your life's mission, but maybe start small. Start with a cat or a dog. When you allow yourself joy and comfort, it's easier to give it to others. Quinn studied him for a long moment before slowly nodding. I will take that under advisement. Hob shrugged awkwardly. Either way, Buttons clearly adores you and will be expecting future visits. A small tentative smile slowly crossed Quinn's face, like she was still relearning how to move those muscles.
And keep in mind what I said as well, Morpheus murmured. Calliope and I have not experienced what you suffered, but at times, speaking to those with similar experiences can be healing itself.
Hob turned wide-eyed to Morpheus. He never spoke about his imprisonment outside of Hob or Calliope's company. To allow himself to be so vulnerable, and to a stranger at that. Hob reached over and squeezed Morpheus's hand. Morpheus returned the grip tightly and gazed at him, with eyes full of brewing storms.
I thank you, Lord Morpheus, and will be sure to find you in my dreams with my decision, Quinn replied with a slight nod. That dream will not trouble you again,
Morpheus commented apropos of nothing as he turned back to her.
You were down there enough in the waking world. You need not revisit it in the dreaming.
Quinn's eyes grew wide and wet. How did you? Morpheus tilted his head with a faint smile. Of course, she whispered with what could possibly be called a weak laugh, sounding rusty with disuse. She rose and bowed formally. My gratitude to you. And with a nod to Hob, she joined the rest of her family, who seemed to be making their way to the door, with final thanks and farewells to Hob and Morpheus, and an exchange of hugs from Joe, Nikki, and even Nile. When it was only Hob and Morpheus once again, Morpheus gently grasped Hob's hand and drew him forward until they were pressed together.
What would you like now, Hob?
Morpheus asked, his lips pressed to his temple.
Honestly, Hob sighed. I want to sleep.
After Hob collapsed into bed exhausted, he dreamed. He smiled when he entered the domain of Fiddler's Green, one of his favorite places to go when he had a long day. It was there Hob found Morpheus resting on one of those old-fashioned picnic blankets surrounded by flowers and some of Hob's favorite foods. His heart squeezed in his chest. Oh, this man. Hob silently made his way over before settling beside Morpheus with the press of a kiss to his cheek.
What's all this?
For you. I figured as much, Hob laughed, but why? Starlit eyes roamed his face while Morpheus traced a thumb along his cheek.
I have mentioned before that the human language is woefully inadequate for what I feel, especially for you,
Morpheus mused.
I know languages from entirely different worlds. I know languages that have gone extinct, and none I've encountered properly express my love for you.
Morpheus spread a hand out to their picnic.
I am the Dream Lord. I could conjure up your deepest desires, fulfill your every dream, and yet still you would not know the extent of my love. But after a long day, I know you like good food, good company, and a quiet place to rest. So this was the best I could provide, inadequate though it may be.
Hob sniffed and shook his head, wondering what he did to deserve so much unconditional love showered onto him. Oh, damn you, you wonderful man, he laughed wetly, drawing Morpheus into a kiss made clumsy with their smiles. Once they broke apart grinning like fools, he tucked himself under Morpheus's solid arm and released a long sigh.
Looking towards the sky, he noted with a start that it was filled with his favorite constellations. Improbable as it was for them all to be so close together. Did Morpheus truly notice earlier? How much Hob longed for a starlit sky to help ground him. He turned to Morpheus, who was gazing at him softly, face lit by the full moon and eyes now sparkling with the binary stars of Alpha Centauri. Oh, fuck. Heart feeling light and fluttery, Hob cupped Morpheus's face and drew him into a gentle kiss, overflowing with all of the love and affection he held for this impossible being. When he drew away, Hob shook his head again with a grin so wide it almost hurt his cheeks. It's perfect.
I believe you intend to say that I am perfect,
Morpheus corrected with a haughty look. Hob knew that Morpheus was expecting some snarky retort, like how someone who refused to wear any color other than black was far from perfect, but fuck it. He was feeling so very grateful and loved, and that brought his sappiness out. So instead, Hob drew Morpheus into another soft kiss and, despite knowing this would unnecessarily inflate his ego, whispered against his lips, practically perfect in every way. The end.